Bars is on tap. Maureen Dobbins, they're both from the Health Evidence Project, and Maureen Dobbins is an associate professor at McMaster University School of Nursing. She's a career scientist of the Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care, and she's done lots of research and has interest in many directions. But in particular, we've noted some here. She's done work on identification of barriers and facilitators to research utilization, because there's tremendous work done on research, but it's not always picked up. So also understanding the information needs of public health decision makers at the local, provincial, and federal level, evaluating the use of systematic reviews in provincial policies. Also, she's been doing work on exploring where research evidence fits into the decision-making process, evaluating the impact of knowledge transfer strategies, and, of course, exploring knowledge brokering in public health units in Ontario. Maureen, you've got many things, many pokers in the fire there. And our other presenter is Paula Robeson, and she is the knowledge broker with the Health Evidence Project. And Paula's role involves tailored approaches to individual and organizational capacity development for evidence-informed public health decision-making. Health Evidence offers a suite of resources and services to Canadian public health decision makers. So if you're new to this project, welcome, and very glad to have you have access to a wonderful resource. And Maureen, we'll go to the next slide there. And today's chat is in collaboration with the project, healthevidence.ca, that is their website. And actually, I'm going to pass over to Maureen and Paula now, and you can describe what you're going to work on today with people, and off you go.
Great. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to be speaking to all of you, and we're so excited at Health Evidence to have this opportunity to have the fireside chat, and also listening as you are all coming online. Hearing that we have representation from so many different provinces in Canada, it's really wonderful and exciting for us to see that happening. This is really a team effort that I need to give credit to the whole Health Evidence team. And so while Paula and I will be describing different aspects of Health Evidence today, the other important people that you need to know about is Cara DeCorby, who is the coordinator of Health Evidence and all the research that goes on. Heather Hudson manages Health Evidence, and some of you may have had sent her questions or following today. You may have questions about Health Evidence. She'd be more than happy to help you with those. Other staff members are Lori Greco, who also works with us as a knowledge broker, Diva Trillis, Lindsay McRae, and Catherine Spolstra are also key people of the team that have really helped bring Health Evidence to what it is today and had a key role in creating this fireside chat. So thank you to everyone for all of your work on that. What we're going to do today is, this is really our opportunity to introduce those of you who haven't seen Health Evidence or used Health Evidence before to talk to you about what it is, how we've created it, a little bit about why we created it, show you how to navigate the site and what are the resources that are there for you to use. And then also to talk a little bit more, and Paula will do a little bit of this, in terms of the knowledge brokering that is one of the services that we are growing with Health Evidence. And that's working one-on-one with local public health units to develop capacity for evidence-informed decision-making and really helping to build a culture in the system that recognizes and understands the need for using the best available evidence in practice, applying that critical lens to the evidence that is out there, and then also the very important work of, well, now that we have it and we've identified the best of it, how do I actually go about integrating that into my decision making, along with all of the other forms of evidence that impact on the kinds of program planning and policy decisions that public health decision makers are faced with. So those are the presentation of information that we are going to do today. I'm going to stop about every 15 minutes or so and ask if there are any questions, and we'll take a bit of time then to address those as we go. I expect that the presentation part will be 30 to 40 minutes, and then we've built in a lot of time at the end to hear your comments, to answer questions, and also I do have Kara and Heather with me in the office, and we can actually do some searching of health evidence right here with you. I can't guarantee that we'll find exactly what you'll need, but we'll certainly do our best, and if there's anything we can follow up with after that, then we certainly will. So, Dot, I'm assuming I'll just keep going from here?
Yes, certainly. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm just going to skip by that. I'm just going to talk about really why healthevidence.ca and go back to actually several years ago. While Health Evidence was launched in March of 2005, it actually took several years of work to bring Health Evidence to the market. Really, the impetus for creating Health Evidence was traveling around the country and hearing from the frontline public health decision makers that they really were having trouble accessing information. And I'm not sure how many of you have done your own searching of various databases, but looking for systematic reviews in our database like Medline really is like looking for a needle in a haystack. And then being able to sift out of that the best available evidence, so the best systematic reviews, is even more difficult. And so decision makers were telling us at the time that they wanted somewhere that where they could go, where they could trust the people that were doing it, so it's a trusted resource that would put in one place the evidence that they needed. And at the time, we were primarily focused on trying to find the evidence about what works in public health. And so that's one of the key things to keep in mind when you are using healthevidence.ca is that everything in health evidence is directly relevant to public health practice in Canada. And that it is exclusively, at this point, evidence that is evaluating the effectiveness of public health interventions, programs, services, and or policies. And so hopefully that it puts a little bit of a parameter around why you would go there, in which instances you would go there, and in which instances you wouldn't go there. So, for example, if you were interested in looking at the relationship between obesity and your risk for cancer, then this wouldn't be the place to come. You're not going to find that yet in healthevidence.ca. While we have some ideas and thoughts about expanding the content of healthevidence.ca, at this point it's completely focused on the evaluation of interventions. So primarily, health evidence saves time. It saves users time and having to do their own searching, or asking someone else if you are lucky enough to have a health librarian that works in your organization or that you can access. It saves the time of actually having to ask them to go and search multiple databases and thousands of titles to find what you're looking for. The other thing that we've learned along the way, and this is really work that would date back to probably the late 90s, early 2000s, is that really two things. Generally, there's a lot of skill building that needs to be done around being able to rate or critically appraise the quality of systematic reviews. While the quality of reviews in general have improved in the published literature over the last 15 years, there still is quite a variability in some that are done extremely well, right down to others that, although published, are still lack some, they have limitations in how they've been done. And so that's the other piece that Health Evidence brings. Every review that you find in Health Evidence has been assessed for methodological quality by two of the healthevidence.ca staff, and we've come to agreement on that quality, and we provide that quality rating for you. And I'll show you a little bit later some of the tools that we use to do this work in terms of determining what's relevant for health evidence and then determining what the quality of those reviews are. So as you will see a little bit later in the presentation, when you do a search on health evidence and you get a results page that pops up, you will actually see the title, you'll see the who did the review, when it was published, and you'll see our assessment of the quality of that. And we're hearing the feedback that we get quite regularly on the site is that that is a very valued thing that we do, because decision makers, by and large, it saves them a fair amount of time if they don't have to be worrying about figuring out for themselves if this is good quality research. And then a work in progress for health evidence is to then summarize the key findings of reviews and draw practical implications for policy and practice. So I'll be showing you a little bit later as well what this looks like. But generally, we also know that another aspect of time is even once you've found a review and once you have identified that it is a good quality review that is worth using in decision making, sometimes reviews can be very lengthy documents, and that even being able to read a document that's 5 to 6 pages is hard enough, never mind one that might be 40, 50, or 100 pages long. And so a key component then is to be able to put in a page or two, a very succinct summary of what is the review about, so that you can determine in 30 seconds or less, does this review answer the question or the issue that I have? We tell you a little bit about the quality so you can feel comfortable that this is the best quality evidence. We tell you what the findings of the review were, as well as what kinds of practical implications there are for policy and practice. And then a final part of the summary also brings your attention to what other evidence exists that is related to that topic, and links are provided to those where they exist. So, in a nutshell, that is a bit about what health evidence is and why we think it is such an important resource for public health decision makers. One of the things that I'll comment before I start talking about the search strategy as well is we did make a decision when we started this project actually back in 2001, where we actually started populating health evidence and figuring out all of the methodology. We made a decision to limit the content to published reviews. And so you will only find at this stage of the game reviews that have been published in journals. The only things that might look a little bit, where the publication status might, where the line might be a bit gray, is certain organizations that are producing high-level documents. We have included those. Cochrane, we do pull from Cochrane. But by and large, we are not going to the gray literature. We're not going to the unpublished literature. And I'd be happy to answer your questions about that, but it is something we are asked about often. And the main reason I'll tell you why we have not gone to the gray literature is that that is an enormous task. I'm a firm believer that if we are going to go through the effort of identifying the gray literature reviews worldwide, that we would need an as comprehensive search strategy as what we use for the published literature. And as a result, as you can imagine, that would be an extremely resource intensive, high cost activity that as of this point we haven't been able to convince anyone to give us the money to do. So we haven't gone down that road at that path, but at this point, but happy to hear your thoughts if you have ideas on how we could go about looking for funding. So I'm just going to now talk about our search strategy. So we've tried to follow a very Cochrane collaboration based type of search strategy in terms of being comprehensive. I'm making an assumption that many of you will have heard of the Cochrane Collaboration, but just in case, the Cochrane Collaboration is an international group of people that came together almost 2 decades ago and created a very rigorous methodology for summarizing the results of multiple studies. And that culminated in the creation of the Cochrane Library, which publishes now on a monthly basis the highest quality systematic reviews and meta-analysis evaluating interventions. So again, Cochrane is only primarily about evaluating interventions. So we have used the Cochrane methodology to create our own search strategy so that people can feel rest assured that we are finding just about everything that is out there published in the systematic review format evaluating public health interventions. I'm going to say just about because I know if I say we're finding absolutely everything that, you know, I'll get an email and someone will have found something we missed. So occasionally something might get missed, but this is the most comprehensive strategy that we can think of at this point. We've identified 7 online databases that are all listed here that generally have public health information in it. So we search those regularly. We've also identified 20 journals that have public health content that we hand search regularly. And then we also look at the reference list of all of the relevant reviews that end up in health evidence. So it's a very intensive process that we use to determine what is potentially available. I think we stopped trying to estimate a few years ago how many titles we've looked at, but I think that, you know, over since 2001 when we've started this, it's definitely, I'm sure, well over 1 million to 2 million titles that we've looked at that has generated the registry where it is today. I don't think I had told you that at this stage of the game, we have approximately 1,900 reviews that exist on health evidence, and that's a growing number basically every day. Then what happens? Once we've done the database searching, then we have we've created a system whereby we assess all of the reviews to determine first whether or not they're relevant to public health. And we have a relevance tool for that. We also have a keywording tool. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, but once we've decided that a review is relevant, then we have created a keywording tool that helps us to identify what that review is about. And that tool was created in significant consultation with public health organizations across the country to identify how is public health being delivered in this country, and that's how we developed a list of the kinds of foci for public health that we could assign keywords to for every article. And I'll show you a little bit more about that in a moment. Then we also assess the methodological quality, and so we have a tool for that, as well as a dictionary that we've created that clearly articulates how all the quality assessment criterion are to be applied. And then we also have created a summary statement template that is our guide for how we want summaries to be written. And so we've been very prescriptive there in terms of what can we say that would tell a decision maker in a few minutes in the most succinct way possible what the review is about. So there's guidelines around what should be written in that paragraph, what should be written about the methods, what should be written about what's the scope of this problem in Canada, and then how we want the evidence to be formatted and the implications for policy and practice. So we've created those tools that guide the process as we go through this. So I'm actually just going to stop there and ask if there are any questions so far that I can address.
Okay, and it's Dot speaking. Wonderful. Just to let you know, I'm going to unmute the lines. A reminder to folks, if you're there with a group and you're talking in the background, please do use *6 to mute your line so that you won't interrupt the discussion. So can we do a quick sound check? Can people say hello, please? We make sure that you're there. Yep. Hello, folks, can you say hello?
Hello.
Hello. Great. Hello. Okay, the lines are open, and it's great. Thanks very much. Hello. The other place that you can post your questions are on the text chat feature on Bridget. So questions from or comments from any of the participants? there are no questions. We're good to go.
Okay. I have a question.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Erica Steibelt calling from the Program Training and Consultation Center. I'm wondering about whether these tools, are they on your website?
Yes, they are. And I'm actually going to take you there in a moment once we finish with the questions here and show you where those are.
Great.
Nice question. Thanks, Erica. Anyone else? Okay. So, Maureen, why don't we keep going? I'll mute the phone lines again, and over to you.
Okay. So I'm actually just going to get a little bit of technical assistance here myself, because I'm just going to actually now take us right into health evidence. So just bear with me for a moment.
Okay, and just before you, Sandy Jancy posted a quick question on the text chat feature. I've just checked. Sorry, Maureen. And she says, does health evidence have information relating to addictions as well as public health?
Yes, thank you. Excellent question. And yes, we do. And I will be showing you shortly the keywording tool, and I'll show you where you would be able to find that kind of information. I guess the one thing to put context into that will be it's addictions evidence that is relevant to the kind of work that public health units would do in addictions. So I don't know if that is sufficiently vague, but I guess it would be the kind of evidence you would see in health evidence around addictions will look a little bit different than if you were looking for, let's say, treatment per se, so something that might be relevant for CAMH, for example. But from a public health perspective, what are the kinds of things we are involved in public health is what we'll see there. But we can also, in the latter half of this session, go and take a look as well if you still have that as a question. But thank you.
Very nice. And then for those people who are on telephone only, just to let you know that in, I guess, parts of today's session, Maureen's going to go actually to the healthevidence.ca website and do a quick demo. So people can do if you're on by telephone only, you can do a follow-up on your own after.
Great. And so we've now, what you're seeing now in front of you is one of our pages on healthevidence.ca, or I hope everyone is, and those of you who aren't able to access Bridget, just bear with me. This won't be in the PowerPoint presentation that you're seeing. But if you look at the top of the page here, and we see I right now have it highlighted on how to use this site, and where we went to was the Judge for Yourself. And so in the Judge for Yourself are all of the tools that we use, and we tell you a little bit about which each one is. And so I can go into that right now, right? So I'm just going to click on the relevance tool and show you that. So, you know, the basic kind of information, but we actually do all of this online now. So we're really, in the early years, this was all paper-based. It's now all been automated, and there's a system that actually facilitates the articles moving through the process from relevance through to quality assessment and then the writing of summaries. But basically, these are the questions that we're interested in. First, it has to be a review article, and I'm going to tell you just a couple things about that in a moment. Is the review relevant to public health or health promotion practice? And while we've kept that a little bit broad, it's primarily for the Canadian system, even though this is widely applicable to many countries in the world, not just Canada. Then we also assess whether or not the effectiveness of an intervention program, service, or policy is the actual subject of the review. And then we also need to know that the outcomes have been included in that write-up of the review. So sometimes, although not that often, we do end up with a review that's being done. For example, if it was a protocol, we know more and more now protocols of reviews and even single studies are being published in journals. So this is not something that would end up, if there was a review like that, wouldn't make it in because it's actually not done yet, or if there, for some reason, a write-up that is missing actual outcome data, then we would actually rate that as no and it wouldn't be included. And then, so a review article is, we started out by saying it just had to be a review, understanding that a review article was something that brought together more than one study to answer a question. And we quickly learned that we needed to actually apply a little bit more rigor to that. And so then we said that they had to, the authors of that review had to tell us in at least one sentence how they searched for the studies that went into that review. And it was actually really surprising to us at the time, this is in about 2002, that by adding that criterion number 5, we actually eliminated about 1,000 papers from health evidence because they were write-ups but had absolutely nothing in it that described where they found the evidence from. And as you can imagine, these would have been reviews probably done, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, really prior to the early 90s when the whole methodology for systematic reviews started emerging. And so we certainly know now that the quality of published reviews is much higher. So every article has goes through this process by two people, and we all have to say yes to all of those criterion. We both have to agree in order for this article to then be included in health evidence. And I'm just going to ask another question. Go back. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so now we're back to the Judge for Yourself page, and I just want to show you briefly our quality assessment tool. And the quality assessment tool is really based on the work of others who have created the criterion for assessing reviews. So again, I'm not going to go over this, but I would encourage you to take a look at this yourself. We encourage users of health evidence to not just accept our rating of an article, but to actually practice doing it yourself. So it just looks like this. It's a 10-point tool, and then we give each article a rating out of 10, with anything being a 7 or higher as being deemed a strong methodological quality, and anything 5 and 6 is moderate, which another word for that would be acceptable, and anything with a rating of 4 or less, we really call that weak, and would suggest that users of that level of evidence should be very cautious about how they're using that. What I'm not going to show you, but what is here, what I'm pointing to here is a dictionary with very detailed points about how you would go about assessing each of those. And then the final tool I'll show you here is the keywording tool, and it's also how you can search health evidence. Just identifies all the different types of ways that we would apply basically text words to each of the articles, so what we assess it for. But I will show you a little bit more of that when we actually do some searching in health evidence. Toggle. Okay, so just so I'm hoping that answered your question. There we go. Okay, so again, this is what the online version of the tool, the quality assessment tool, would look like. And one of the things that we've changed with health evidence in the past few years is we heard through the feedback loop that we have on the site that users of health evidence were interested to see what our rating was, like how we came up with the rating. And so now for every review that is available in health evidence, you would also get our filled-in form that would show you how we ended up applying the tool and how we came up with its overall rating, and this is just what it would look like. Okay, so, and then just a little bit about the practical summaries. This is what they would look like. We tell you what the review is based on. We also give you some information on how you can cite the summary, because that's kind of one of the new things that's a bit problematic, is how do you actually cite something when it's a summary of something else. And so we provide a little bit of information where, what's the actual review that the summary is based on. And then the page one really is just giving you what the review content is about. And we try, really, to keep it as short as possible. And what we also, right up here, that what you'll see is we date them all as well. And I don't know if you've experienced this in the past, but we always need to know when a summary has been done, just like we need to know when a review has been published, because we need to have some sense of how current it is. And so that's what you'll always see there. And then a little, just shows you what the evidence, we call this the evidence table. So on the left-hand side is the actual evidence that is in the review. So we don't put our own interpretation into this evidence at all. We try to write it in very non-jargon type terms, very layman terms of what the results are. And then on the right-hand side are those implications for policy and practice, where we really try to sit back and think, if I was sitting in a health unit thinking about how to use this evidence, what would I do? What would I need to do in order to implement this or to change a program? And that's what's in our minds when we're writing these. Okay, so I just wanted to show you a little bit about what health evidence looks like. So this was the home page, which you might have only quickly saw there for a moment. You'll see up at the top here, sign up, log in. The site is available partly in French. And what I'll say to that is everything that is, words that we write, so the creation of the homepage here, the tools, anything that we are responsible for writing ourselves, we do our best to get as much of that information translated into French. The site is also searchable in French, but what isn't in French is the actual evidence that we're getting out of the databases. So the abstract of a review that's been published in English is only at this point appearing on the site in English. We don't require you to become a registered user of healthevidence.ca. Anyone can come onto the site at any point and use health evidence. What we do ask is that you do become a registered user, which is basically a very simple process that gives us a little bit of information about who you are. And there's two main reasons why we do that. One is it's really important for us to know who's using the site so that we can identify areas, whether it's geographic areas or areas in public health, that where there are gaps in users. And it helps direct us in terms of where we need to do our marketing efforts. More importantly, why we ask you to become a registered user is we ask you to tell us, what kind of information do you want to learn about? So what area do you work in? And the reason why we do that is so that when we send information out to our users, we can tailor that information so you would only find out about new reviews that are directly relevant to the areas that you work in. So this is our homepage. There's just, it's a typical kind of homepage. Down the right-hand side is a welcome that tells you a little bit about who we are and what we're doing and why we're doing it. And then through the middle section there, something new we just started a few months ago was letting you know what the most accessed review was from the current week. And this one is a pretty popular one on obesity. And then what you see right below that is tools to support evidence-informed decision-making. So part of what we've also been doing along the way is in working with people, new tools are being identified, and we're putting them up here and making them available for you to access. So if you wanted to do some searching, then there's various ways that you can do it. One of the things that we also have included in health evidence is the ability for you to save your search. And I'll show you something a bit more about that in a moment. There's different ways that you can search health evidence. In the box here, you can put in your own terms and decide if you want to or them and and them. Or you can use down here, which is a drop-down menu of boxes. We've really tried to make everybody happy in providing two different ways. You can also ask to only see like strong reviews, and you can also tell it how many you would like to see per page, or if you only want to see ones with summary statements. This is what the keywording tool looks like. And so there's various ways that you can also search. You can search by just looking at the focus of a review. So you'll see right here up at the top, you can click on addiction. Now you could click on that and pull up everything on addiction. Everywhere where you see a little plus sign means there's a further drop-down menu. And so if we were to click on this right now, this would open up, and I believe there's probably 10 to 15 more subcategories under addictions that you could click on. The same under chronic diseases, a very large drop-down list, and even sometimes within those subcategories, there are further subcategories. So you can search by the focus of the review. You can search by whether or not you want a meta-analysis, a narrative review, or a systematic review. You can search by the intervention location. So you can see here camps or something that's regional, provincial, clinics, commercial sites, schools. There's a long list there. You can also search by age groups and or different kinds of populations, specific populations. And then you can also search by specific intervention strategies. And again, there's drop-down menus there. The interesting thing here is that you can just search one square, one topic, or you can put these together. And so we're just showing you here a search was done. And what we found, if you just were to read up here, someone clicked on, they wanted to find reviews that where the focus of the review were adults, a high-risk group was in the population characteristics. We were interested in cardiovascular disease, lifestyle behaviors. And what we found is that we found 169 results. And so that might be way too many, and likely is too many to look here. And so what we also have built in is if you were to get a very large number of results or no results, then you're going to get some messages popping up saying, would you like some help in refining your search? And these are some of the instructions that you're going to get. And so you can be asked, do you want to be oring those terms, or do you want to think about anding those terms? And so you get some extra direction there in terms of how to optimize the search that you're going to run. One of the other things that we've also learned along the way is, and because public health is an evolving field that's constantly changing, and there's lots of terminology, and the terminology not only differs from province to province, it also differs from division to division and also within teams. And so sometimes we'll have used a certain term that seems to be, you know, what the majority uses. And then someone will send us an email and say, well, how come you don't have this word on your keywording tool? So what we've done now to also assist with the searching is created a bit of a thesaurus that will link different kinds of terms together. So this might ask, if we did a search on breastfeeding that returned 51 results, this is going to ask us, did you mean lactation instead of breastfeeding? Did you mean breast milk instead of breastfeeding? And then we can go through those and click on the ones that yes, I did mean that, or no, I didn't mean that, and then it'll rerun our search for us. Okay, again, sometimes what happens is that you might not get any, you get very few results. And so there's a couple of reasons why we found that happens. Sometimes the questions can be very, very specific. And so if you were thinking back to the keywording tool I put in front of you with all of the little boxes and the breakdown menus, you can click on so many things that it ends up making the search much too specific, and there's really, you get nothing back. And I can tell you that physical activity is one of the most prevalent kinds of reviews that are out there in public health. And so there's I think our last count, actually I can't even remember, I just know that there's likely hundreds of reviews that are chronic disease related, and a good number of those somehow touch on physical activity. So this again will ask you questions like, did you mean physical fitness instead of physical activity? Do you want to use both terms? And then the other thing that you can do here is save your search. And this is where you can do that. You're allowed to save up to 50 searches in your user account. So again, this is one of the benefits of becoming a registered user, is that it creates an account for you, and it's somewhere where you can save your search. And these are very important activities to do. I don't know if you have ever been in this position that I've been, where you know you're popping in all of these questions into a database to do your search, and then when you finally find something that's relevant, you're so excited about that, you end up closing the whole system down before you save your search, and you don't know in the end what was that final list of terms that I used. So this is another resource that we've put on the site in direct reaction to users telling us this would be something that's useful for them. I'm just going to stop here again and see if there are some questions. And Paula, I don't know if you might like to comment on, I understand you've been answering some questions.
Yep, I think we should be responding to.
There have been several. One related to whether or not we have information on the site related to environmental health, and there is information in that category. Folks wanted to know the pathway to get to the tools on the website, particularly those who are not visually accessible. So it was the Health Evidence website at http://... health-evidence.ca, and then go to how to use this site, and then judge for yourself, and you should find the tools by scrolling down just slightly.
Yeah, and just so you know, I've put that information in the follow-up email that I'm going to send out to the participants when we finish today.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And the next question related to childhood obesity and diabetes from Hilda. She wondered if there was information on the website specifically related to diabetes-related outcomes, and yes, there are. And you can either text box search with diabetes as one of the keywords, or go under chronic diseases under focus review, and the drop-down menu under chronic diseases will have diabetes there.
And do they cross list, like, link the childhood obesity to the diabetes?
You can do that both ways as well. You can text box diabetes and put also obesity in, or the focus of review, you can click on diabetes and then under chronic diseases click on obesity or factors related to obesity like physical activity, nutrition, and it will combine those.
Can you tell me a bit, it's Kate Graves. Could you tell me a bit more about the Cochrane methodology?
Sure. I was
Although
really
those articles are separate from the free access journal.
Yes, so that's where we're at right now. So we also search the Cochrane Library regularly, and what we do know is that we currently have 335 Cochrane reviews have been identified as being relevant to public health. And so those are also, you can find out about those through healthevidence.ca. And one of the things that I think is useful about that is there are over 6,000 reviews in the Cochrane Library as of actually just yesterday. And it's, I don't know how familiar you are with searching Cochrane, but it can be a little bit challenging to find the public health evidence in Cochrane. And so we've done all of that work, we've put it, it's accessible here, and what this is showing you, the slide that I have up here right now, I'm actually just going to close that to show you this, is what we're trying to do is make available access to the full text review when it's freely available. So what this is showing you here is of the 1,900 reviews that are on Health Evidence, there's free access to 607 of those, and there are 335 Cochrane articles. And what you'll see at the bottom here is we provided the related links. The one thing, I guess it's the kind of sad news that's going on in Canada right now, is up until a few weeks ago, as a country, we had, everyone had access to the Cochrane Library. And so if this was a Cochrane review we were showing you here right now, and this was the link to it, you could have clicked on that and ended up right there in the library at that review. That, due to funding, ceased to happen. We're hopeful that at some point we might be able to get that back. And certainly if that's something you feel is necessary for your job, I encourage you to be lobbying your government members of parliament about that, because they're certainly the ones that need to be involved in funding. But so we do as much as we can to promote easy access. And some of the things that also, this access is different for just about every person in the country. So it really depends what access your organization has, subscriptions to various organizations, where some of these links might work for some of you and some of them might not work for others. It really depends what your organization has access or purchased access to. So I'll just stop there again and just see if there are any other questions at this point of what I've talked about so far.
Can you just clarify there, you were talking about access to the Cochrane reviews, and you're saying that it depends on if the organization that we're working with has purchased access?
So that, so up until a few weeks ago, everybody had access to the Cochrane Library. Now, only certain people. So if you belong to a university that has a medical school, you have access to the Cochrane Library. Individual organizations may have bought a subscription to the Cochrane Library, so I don't know if your particular organization has, but you could probably find out.
Okay.
Through very, like, your, if you have a library or a health librarian or whoever.
Yep.
Takes care of resources.
Maureen, it's Lori Greco here. Can I just add to that?
Yep.
The Canadian Cochrane Centre is working very hard to try to get funding for all Canadians for access to the library. As you've just mentioned, we all had until December. I do happen to know that Wiley hasn't quite turned off the access yet, so all Canadians still have access to full-text Cochrane reviews on the Cochrane Library. But that could stop at any time as soon as they catch up and turn it off. But the Canadian Cochrane Centre is working hard to get that access reinstated, and there's a good possibility that that'll happen shortly.
Great. Thanks, Lori. That's a good tip. Okay, so I'm going to move us along then. Okay, so the next slide, this slide talks about, and as I've alluded to a little bit, different kinds of resources that we've also created along the way, in addition to the registry of all of the systematic reviews. So we also know that this work of doing evidence-informed decision-making is very complex. Really is an interface between many users, many levels of decision-makers, and it's really, really hard work at the front line to really do this in practice. And so whatever can be done, whatever tools can be made available to help that process is work that ourselves as well as others are interested in doing. And so while I'm not going to show you these tools right now, they are right there on the site. If we have some time at the end, I'm definitely will take us there to show you them. But basically, we have recently posted to Health Evidence 7 tools that break down the process of evidence-informed decision-making, from thinking about how do I go from having a practice problem or policy-based issue and turning that into a question that can that will help me search for good evidence, to tools that would help you, or if we know many health units are now doing their own in-house literature reviews, so are there's a tool there that would help you walk through that process of synthesizing the evidence. So there's various tools there to take a look at. We at Health Evidence are also always interested in doing workshops and other educational initiatives to help develop capacity amongst the public health workforce across the country around evidence-informed decision-making. And as well, what's particularly interesting here, and I'll try to ensure I show you this a little bit later in the presentation, A few years ago in Ontario, there was a number of medical officers of health in anticipation of the new program guidelines that were going to come out from the ministry, where obesity prevention was going to be highlighted. But in reading the earlier drafts of those of that document, they felt that there was a lack of direction generally about, you know, the specifics of doing obesity prevention. And so they actually, a request came to Health Evidence to say, is there anything that you can do that would help us access the evidence and help us figure out what to do? And what we were able to do as a result of Health Evidence and already having all of this evidence accumulated in one place and assessed for methodological quality was, from the time the request came in to the time we were able to actually post something onto the site was about 2 months, where we were able to identify 455 good quality reviews evaluating chronic disease prevention interventions, and we categorized them all by in four different ways, by the type of disease, type of chronic disease, the type of intervention, the population, and the location of the strategy. And what these are now are four searches that are live searches that if you were to go in there today, you would get everything that is current right to today of those reviews that exist in those different topic areas. And again, you'd still get all of the information in terms of the strength, the quality of the review, those sorts of things. And then we also provide a link to other resources that support EIDM. So we've been scanning, as Paula uses in knowledge broker terms, scanning the horizon, looking for workshops, various initiatives, communities of practice. So anything that is out there that would be a helpful resource for not only public health decision makers, but that's our primary target audience. We have created a resource page with links out to those other kinds of organizations. And that is something that's building all the time. So I'm just going to actually take you through a couple of examples now. So this is something that has come in the past from an inquiry that came from someone using the healthevidence.ca site. And they said they were interested in program planning around infant feeding. And this is a very typical kind of question that we might get, and they're saying, where do I go from here? So one of the things, and I don't know how familiar you are, it's one of the downsides to the technology, I can't see faces, but what we do and what many librarians would really love for you to do if you have questions for them is to create a question from an issue that addresses what we call PICO, which is, what is the population you're interested in? What is the intervention or interventions that you would like to know about? What is it being controlled to? And what are the specific outcomes that you would like to know about? And if you were to take the time, if I had the time right now to have you all think about this and write out a question and break it down into these components, then what you have at the end of that is the terms that you can use to guide your search. So as an example, from this question that came in from a user, our population are infants. The intervention we're looking at are infant feeding methods. Not necessarily applicable for this one around what to compare it to. What we're interested in, what we might start with, is growth and development. It might be that what we're mostly interested in is in future IQ, but we might leave it a little bit broad at this point. And so we would say, what is the effectiveness of different infant feeding programs on infant growth and development? So we've run our search on healthevidence.ca, and what we found, what we did was we actually used our drop-down keywording tool and clicked on nutrition, we clicked on parenting, infants and children, and we clicked off under population characteristics the age group of infants, 0 to 1, and we ended up finding 65 reviews that somehow address something related to those terms. And so that seems like a lot to me. I don't really have time to look through the titles of 65 reviews. So what else can we do now? We can filter the results by just saying, I just want to see the strong or the very well done systematic reviews. That tells me that we still have 41 left. We can limit to specific publication dates, so I might only want to know about what's been published in the last 2 years. Or maybe there's something more specific about the outcome or the intervention that we could further narrow our search. So after narrowing that, we ended up, help me out here.
Oh, did you pass by one? No, it's just you can also limit it if you're looking just for a summary statement.
Oh, yes, that's right. So, yes, I'm on my computer. I only have about 5 minutes to really get a sense of what's here. So I said in the final limit is just throw up reviews that have a summary statement, and that's indicated by this PDF icon here. Whenever you see that in a results set, it means that there is a summary. And so what we have one here is reducing obesity and related chronic disease risk in children and youth, a synthesis of evidence with best practice recommendations. We also, what you see here is now you have the opportunity to save this search. And you could, so that's all I'm going to say about this at this point. So another option that we have here, coming from an environmental health perspective, is a question that came in on how do I find review literature on mold in schools. So again, here our population would be school-aged children and school staff. We are open to any of the interventions that might help us around mold control, could be comparing that to usual practice, and our outcome could be mold reduction, with a question of what interventions are effective in reducing mold in schools. We used the keywording tree, we clicked on environmental health, and then further clicked on the subcategory of mold, and then we clicked our intervention location as a school, and we ended up with zero results. So one of the important things to keep in mind here is just because you get a zero result, don't stop. While it is right that there are some areas in public health that have very limited evidence, most areas of public health have at least one review. So we need to keep thinking about, well, what else can we do here? So one of the things, one of the suggestions might be to broaden your search. So maybe we need to just look up mold and see what's in mold and forget about putting an intervention location. So when we actually click remove schools from our search, we do find that we have one review that focuses on mold, and it's called Healthy Housing, a structured review of published evaluations of U.S. interventions to improve health by modifying housing in the United States. So what we do know here is that somewhere in this review it's actually going to talk about the issue of mold, and that's why this came up. But for us, we don't have a good result here because this isn't actually going to be addressing anything to do with schools. What I will show you here in terms of what your results set looks like is you get the title of the article, which is linked. So it's not showing you because this is just a picture, but this will take you, if we were to click on this, it will now take you right through to the abstract of that review. We know who the authors are, we know when it was published, and we know that this is a very weak, the quality of this review is quite weak. And so when we get this kind of a result, we are now left with saying, okay, now I'll need to probably start looking for primary studies, individual studies in the typical kinds of databases like Medline in order to see what's there around mold and schools. So that will lead you here, which is, you know, in the step three. So, you know, if you don't find anything at the review level, then where do I go? And this is some of the typical places that you would go. We do have some portals available to us in Canada that facilitate access to multiple databases. There's Nurse One. There's also Penn, which is a nutrition-based site. We have Cochrane Library here, but this wouldn't be for individual. Well, what you can access through the Cochrane Library is a database of randomized control trials. So there, and you could go looking for things there. And then, of course, we can go to PubMed as well. Okay, and so I just want to actually finish off this part of the discussion with a few of the other things that we offer at Health Evidence, and I'm also will ask Paula to comment as well. But there's a number of things that have been emerging based on the needs that have emerged from the field. And so the more we work one-on-one with health units, the more we realize the kinds of resources that are really are required in order to facilitate evidence-informed decision-making. So one of them is what we would call the facilitated evidence review. So we had a health unit that called us up about a year ago and said that they were thinking about implementing a mass media campaign on, it doesn't really matter what it was on, but they were just thinking of implementing a campaign that another health unit actually had implemented. But they wanted a little bit of help in reviewing the literature just to make sure that they were doing it right. And so we met with them. We helped them identify what were the questions that they were trying to answer. We then searched health evidence and identified for them 10 reviews that were related to that question. So we identified some reviews that were there. We ended up doing some searching of the primary literature for them. We helped them walk through the process of assessing the quality of those reviews. And then we assisted them, assisted meaning we were in the room as really more as guidance and support while they assessed the evidence and came to a conclusion for themselves as to whether or not they wanted to move ahead with their program and how they wanted to do any tweaking. So that, you know, that's the way that we can assist organizations in facilitating access to the evidence and doing some critical appraisal either with them or for them and then pulling that together. Another way that we've done it, which is for a randomized control trial we're running right now, we were trying to develop some very broad level messages around breast cancer prevention and public health's role in that. And so we have synthesized the evidence from over 30 well-done reviews on the various kinds of interventions that have been supported in the literature that public health could be involved in. And we've synthesized all of that into one succinct document of the kinds of the evidence-supported interventions. And we've used an expert panel to also guide that process. So those are the different kinds of reviews of all of the evidence that can be done. We also provide a lot of instruction and support and help in literature searching and instruction. So we've created various workshops that walk people through the steps of doing good searching and getting more comfortable and confident and effective with their searching. And those are things that we do face-to-face and also can do online. And then the mentoring and brokering support. And so over the last number of years, we've been working more and more one-on-one with health units to develop capacity to help them create the kind of culture in their organization that allows this work to be happening. And so, Paula, I might have you step in here and comment a bit, given the amount of brokering work you've done in the past several years.
So we've been contracted by specific health units to help support their efforts around evidence-informed decision-making. And that has involved more intensive work one-on-one with some key decision-makers within the organization to enhance their knowledge and skills around what is evidence-informed decision-making and the steps in the process, and then to assist them in addressing organizational barriers to evidence-informed decision-making. It is based upon a thorough assessment of the organizational readiness for change related to evidence-informed decision-making, and then individual interviews around people's perceptions of those barriers and facilitators to local implementation.
Great. Thanks, Paula. So that actually brings us to the end of the presentation. I guess I really just talk way too much because that took a lot longer than I was hoping it would. So I'll just have Dot open it up now to questions that you have for us about health evidence.
Okay, very good. Actually, it's good timing, Maureen. We're just at 2:20, so we have a few minutes for questions. Can we do a quick sound check? Can folks on the line just say hello? We'll find out if the lines are open or muted.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Wonderful. We got lots of folks staying out to on to the sweet end. So, Maureen, that's good news. They're still there. A reminder to folks to keep the background noise as quiet as you can. And why don't we start with, are there some folks on the telephone who would like to ask a question or make a comment?
This has been very helpful, I have to tell you. I didn't know this existed. Like with some of the work I'm doing, this will just be fabulous.
Great, thank you.
Wonderful. Comments from any of the other folks?
You have a review completed, such as the breast cancer review. Is that easily accessible?
It isn't yet, but it will eventually become available. I guess it's one of the dilemmas in telling you about it. Then I thought, oh, no, now people will want it. This is actually going to be part of the content that we are evaluating in a knowledge translation strategy for a study. And so we're going to be actively starting to push that out to people allocated to that group. But despite that, we're probably within a few weeks of finalizing that particular document. And once that is available, as long as that in the short term, if it isn't going to interfere with the actual trial that we're running, then we should be able to make that information. We would put it up on the website in essence.
Okay. Nice question. Thanks, Kate. How about a question or comment from anyone else? I'm curious, is this the kind of resource that would be of use to you in your work? Is this or how would you use it? I'll ask that of the participants then.
Do you think this is fabulous? I didn't know this existed. Like I also am on the Nursing Research Interest Group of RNAO, and I really have not done much research, but because I'm so involved with the environment now and diabetes, and I have to start writing something and publishing it in research to have any credibility, I was kind of overwhelmed where to even begin. So this is really helpful.
That's great to hear. Thank you.
Thanks. And then, Maureen, if you want to open up your the text feature there, the participant list and comments, there is a nice question from Kirsten at the very bottom there, and she's asking, how does Health Evidence track update from their website?
Great. Thanks, Kirsten. That's an excellent question. We have a number of metrics that we use, and uptake is an interesting word in terms of how one might actually define that, but on a daily basis, we do track how many people access the site, so how many users are there to Health Evidence. We know how many pages they visit. We know how long they spend on the site. We know where, what province they come from, and we know what kinds of, which reviews that they are accessing. And so that's how we're able to identify the most highly accessed reviews. And that's one of the proxy measures that we use for Health Evidence kind of being a useful resource, that many times the big concerns of the day or the week, the policy issues, things that we're seeing in the media correlates nicely with the reviews that are being accessed the most. So we have those kinds of statistics. We also know that when we send out emails to, and when we send messages out to our registered users, which there are about 4,000 in the country at this point, site usage goes up dramatically. So generally, we have about visits a day. Sometimes we see that go up to 500 a day following a message that's gone out telling people about all of the new reviews that have just been added to the site. So we know that that's a good proxy measure that's tied to pushing information out. One of the things that we can't tell or we can't assume is that just by accessing the site and a particular review doesn't necessarily mean that that's being translated into practice. And that's why an integral part of what we're doing here. I mean, we're involved in the provision of this service and resource to frontline practitioners, and at the same point have a very active research program that is evaluating these different kinds of strategies so that we can really then use the knowledge from the research we do to focus on the kinds of KT strategies that we're doing. So excellent question. I have another question here. If you have searched the site and cannot find any evidence, would this prompt health evidence to look for reviews on that topic? Thank you. That's an excellent question. And yes, I mean, I would encourage all of you to provide us with your feedback. So if anyone has heard me talk about health evidence before, or any of the staff, health evidence is really a work in progress, and we are constantly tweaking and trying to make it better to meet the needs of public health. And so we welcome all feedback that you have, good or bad, good or constructive, let's say. And while we have to pair what resources we have available in terms of adding new topic areas, we want to hear about that from you if you have ideas.
If I could jump in there, too.
Yes, Lisa, go ahead. And there's someone who's making a lot of noise in the background. If they could either star six their phone or just hold the paper still. Thanks. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Paula. So just to add to what Maureen was saying, if you've searched and can't find any evidence, you may want to highlight your reason for searching, your actual question, in our feedback feature, and there may be some opportunities to provide you some support in searching more effectively, which may result in reviews, or it may be a topic that we need to consider adding.
Wonderful, thanks. And I'm going to ask people who are still on Bridget if they could type in on that text feature. What kind of topics or issues are you working on that a search on health evidence would help? And we've got one posting from Carol who's said that she would want to search about effectiveness of healthy eating policies in childcare settings. So could everybody just who's on Bridget just type in something that you'd be working on or interested in? And it would be... Let's take a moment and see what we get.
I'm on the phone, and I have a question for
you. Sure, go ahead.
What is food security effectiveness of different community support environmental interventions? Would that be a typical question?
Sure. So if I were to get that, I might just ask, so what are food security interventions?
What is food security effectiveness of different community support environmental interventions?
Right. That is a fantastic question. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you exactly what will be in health evidence about that, but it's certainly something that with the few minutes we have remaining, we can try to see if we can find something. One thing to keep in mind... And this is kind of the downside of where we currently are at with respect to public health research, is while we have areas like chronic disease prevention where at our last count we had approaching 500 reviews looking at chronic disease prevention, then we get to areas that are related to this question that's been posed around food security and other environmental health issues where we actually have very little that exists at the systematic review level. That's one problem. And furthermore, there's even there's very little even in the individual studies. And so we can only have on health evidence what actually does exist out there. One of the things that we have done in a project that was funded by the National Collaborating Center for Methods and Tools in 2009 was we searched all over health evidence and identified where the gaps are in the review literature. And we're feeding that information back not only to the National Collaborating Center, but now to the funding bodies, various funding bodies in Canada, research funders, so that reviews in this area can be, in the gap areas, can be commissioned so we can get more of that available. So I see that some answers are being written there.
Yep, and just to tell you, and if you could do it in like 10 seconds as opposed to 2 minutes, how's that?
I don't know. I'm an academic. I'm not sure I can do that.
I know. So, Maureen and Paula, if there was a last thought, what would that be?
Well, you know, I think that health evidence is a growing, the goal is for it to be the one-stop shop for effectiveness evidence in public health that really is trying to be very easy for people to use, and we certainly would love to hear your feedback. If you have questions from today, generally, please send them through the website or to Heather Husson, and Dot can facilitate you having access to and they're here in the presentation, mine and Kara's and Heather's. And with the questions that you've posed, if you are having trouble finding anything on health evidence, then certainly email us, and we'd be more than happy to help you see what's there.
Excellent. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a bunch. Paula, over to you. You get the last one.
Maureen concisely summed up what I was about to say, and additionally that in addition to the website, I'll just bring you back to the other services.
Well, it was a pleasure speaking to everyone today, and we hope to hear and see you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.